Vegan Podcast, episode 125. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins, and it's my second episode of the new year, 2015. And I was really planning to do it after my street stall on Saturday, but I was too tired. I even just came home and just fell straight asleep. But we had a great time. I've been doing a street stall with two people were there with me. Bubs and Peters, who has actually been on my podcast before, and Jeff Lyons has been coming along, and we've been having really great days. So I could probably do a whole episode just on the street stall, but I've actually got some other things that I wanted to talk about. And usually, just like anything else, they kind of are usually a series of events, and when I see a pattern, I usually start to comment on it. And that's usually what happens. It's like if I see just a one-off thing in the animal movement or whatever, I think, oh, whatever, unless it's something that really bothers me or if something happens to me and I just need to get it off my chest because, you know, that's what the whole point of the podcast is. But sometimes, you know, when I comment on other things, there are a series of things that I notice and I'm like, here's a trend or here's something that a lot of people are sharing or a lot of people are getting into. And I comment on it. So it's never just one person or one time. It's usually this series of things, and usually it's something that is quite popular, so a lot of people might be doing it. So if I talk about something that you might have been involved in, one of the listeners, I might not have even seen you, you know, it just happens, and I just comment on them because it's usually this accumulation of things, and usually I get to a point where I'm like, oh, I can't take anymore, I have to talk about this, because I try not to type too much online. I'm back at my other job where it's really intensive typing, and I can only do so much typing. So one of the ones that I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to be kind of a killjoy again as per usual, but I think my criticisms are valid. Just because I remember a long time ago on my podcast in the very, very beginning, I think it was one of my earliest episodes when I was really new and I was a new abolitionist and I was still in contact with a lot of the new welfarist community, the vegan community in New Zealand, and I was on a mailing list, and I had been reading Gary Francione's blog and listening to his interviews and listening to his debate with Eric Marcus. I listened to that quite a few times because it's very long, and I learned so much from that. But I was still new and I was still very cautious about upsetting people myself or saying the wrong thing. Also because I was a new vegan and I was new in the country, and I really thought that I was going to have this whole new community of friends that were going to be all vegans, and it didn't work out that way because ideologically and philosophically I just didn't agree. And it kind of began with little things. I mean, it was always going to be a problem because they were new welfarists, but I always really hoped that they would, I just thought I would just have to introduce them to it and they would just get it. Just like I thought people would just watch Earthlings and go vegan. It doesn't happen that way, unfortunately. But there was a email sent around, and it was supposed to be funny. It was a Happy New Year email. I talked about it anyway in this podcast, and there were these pictures of animals and these captions, but this was a vegan group that sent it around. And I didn't have the guts to say that in the podcast at the time because, like I said, I was still very intimidated, and I wasn't quite the person I am today. But I complained about it in my podcast because it upset me so much, and I didn't complain about it to the senders. I didn't write back to this. Nowadays, I'm different. I would have written back to the email group and said, don't you see how wrong this is? You know, it was just different pictures, and some of them showed really terrible things happening to non-humans, and it was supposed to be funny. There was like two or three that were really bad, and there were other ones that were nice. But the thing is, the bad ones were really, you know, really bad. There was a rodeo one and just things like that, and it was supposed to be this happy thing from these vegans, and I was like, this is not cool. But that's kind of, so what's been happening is there's been these videos, I don't know what country it is, maybe it's Brazil or something, where these animal activists, or I don't even actually know who, because I don't speak the language, maybe somebody else can give me some insight. There's the first one that I saw was in a supermarket, and they had a live piglet and a machine that made sausages, and they were tricking people who were coming up to them asking for fresh sausages by pretending to put the live piglet into the machine and crank out the sausages. And then we were talking about the people's reactions. And a lot of people have been posting this all over the place. I've seen it all over the place. And first of all, I was instantly bothered by them using a live piglet. Honestly, I don't care for what good cause it is. You haven't got any right to stress out an animal in that way. It was a noisy, scary. I mean, if somebody knows the piglet personally, and then they know that this was a pet piglet, and he just loved all this, and he was just having the time of his life, you know, I would still probably not agree with it. But you know, I don't know. But I doubt it. I think we have to be really, really careful. You know, other people were saying, oh, they're using animal products because they were pumping out sausages, so they obviously had some raw meat that they were using to create these sausages, and they're like, oh, that's bad. And I'm like, but what about the piglet? They were holding him up, and then they were putting him down into a hole, and then putting into the arms of another woman. It would have been noisy, and then there was this really loud machine. Now, I didn't hear a lot of the audio, and I think the piglet was squealing. I didn't really watch it too many times, so maybe he was squealing as well. And if he was, I doubt it was in pleasure. So anyway, I just object to the use of this live piglet. I don't care for what good a cause it is. I don't think you should take an animal into a stressful situation. And honestly, I just don't. And I'm sorry if everybody thinks I'm such a drag. You know, I just don't think you should do that. And I also have some more thoughts about it, because I was like, there's something else about this, because everybody's like, oh, look at these people, they haven't made the connection. A lot of people claim that people don't realize that animals are dead animals, like animal products are dead animals. And they've done tests on some US and English school children who actually literally didn't, like, they would hold up a chicken wing, like the that you would buy to eat, and then they would show a picture of a chicken, and the kids had no idea that this was actually a wing from that bird. And I can understand that, but I think most of these people in this video knew full well that sausages were made out of pigs. I really just don't think they didn't know that. So first of all, the premise that they didn't know that, they, you know, they didn't know that, I don't think that was quite the exact premise. But that, because what happened is, the people, when they were watching them supposedly put this living piglet into a machine and turn him into sausages right there in front of them, alive, right? They reached over, they tried to stop, they screamed no, they were just absolutely horrified. They were freaking out. And that was the whole point of this video, was to watch these, to show these people freak out and say, you know, I don't know if they got talked to about veganism. I don't really know what happened after that, but I don't even know if it was a vegan video. Like, it might have just been some Brazilian or South American, or perhaps, is it Israeli? I don't know. I think it might have been South American prank show, right? Like, where they did this to people in a supermarket for a laugh, and then the vegans got onto it and said, oh, this is an example of, you know, showing people animal use and waking them up to the fact that these are animals and things like that, and getting them thinking about it. And yeah, obviously, on one way it was, because there is this huge disconnect for most city dwellers, people who don't live on farms and who don't go out and hunt animals, that they don't have to look into the eyes of the animal whose body they're eating, because the head's removed and it's just bits of corpses. They don't have to think about the living animal. They don't have to think about the death of the animal. They don't have to dwell on any of that. It's all packaged and pretty for them. And yeah, that is very true. And I'm sure there was some aspect of that to it. It's like, I don't want to know about my dirty work. I want the end product, but don't remind me of the dirty work. That's why you can't hardly get people to watch Earthlings or some of these videos, right? You can't hardly get them to do it. They refuse to do it. But I also think, and here's where I'm, first of all, I don't agree with using a live animal, putting an animal in a stressful situation. I just don't think we have any right to do that to them. I don't think it's fair on that animal. I think we need to be careful that the, you know, they say the ends justify the means and all that, but I just was bothered by that aspect of it instantly. But the other thing I sort of thought about, and I'd written somebody about this, but I was starting to think about it, and I thought, you know, I think that this reaction was not just this horror, like, oh my god, I'm eating dead animals when I eat sausages and they're just so cute and how could I do this. I actually don't think it's that, because I know when I was non-vegan, I would look at cute little pigs and say, oh, how cute, and then I'd go eat sausages and I knew they were pigs, but I didn't know they weren't pigs, but obviously I didn't think about the cuteness and the little pigs while I was eating them. So yes, they're putting those two together. That was, you know, this is what the vegans are, who are sharing it and stuff, sort of say. But I really do believe that the reaction was more about the treatment, because you know, people, that's why the Happy Meat movement's so big, is that people, I think it was because in the video they were pretending to put the living piglet into a machine, no anesthetic, without killing him, and he was ground up into sausages alive. And I think they found that horrifying. I mean, they were physically trying to stop the man from doing that, and which is comforting. I mean, obviously this is way better than them just standing there and just looking and chewing their gum while it happened and then saying thank you. So yes, there is hope, you know, this is a good thing. The people do care about animals, but we know this already. But were they worried about the treatment, or were they worried about the fact that here I am faced with my food? And I could be wrong. I think we'd have to do an interview with them and really get into it and really talk to them about it. But I do think a lot of it was the fact they were horrified that he was going to be ground up alive, because people are given this illusion that animals are taken to slaughterhouses carefully and that they're put to sleep before their throats are slit and that it's all painless and, you know, that it's really not as bad. A lot of people have never seen a slaughterhouse video. I know the first time I ever saw one, I've written about it, but it was shocking. So I wonder if they had showed them the piglet and then, you know, said, we'll be right back, we're just going to go to put him to sleep and make him into sausages after he's been humanely slaughtered. I wonder how many people would have reacted. What does everybody think about that? I'm curious to know what the answer would be. I'm not willing to do the experiment, because I'm not willing to take a live piglet into a supermarket and stress him out and freak him out. But I do wonder about whether that was it. But then I saw another video, and that's sort of my view of that video, and I'm not sharing it, obviously. I don't agree with using animals, and I don't really think it's making the point that people might think it's making. That's just my thought. I'm not trying to be a killjoy. If I thought it was really good and if I thought it was doing things, I would say it. And I did mention the positive things, the fact that people cared at all, the fact that, you know, there was some kind of connection made, and I acknowledge all those things, but in general, it's just not something that I'm really going gaga over. The way I've looked around on the web and seems to be a lot of people posting it. So I am curious to know about that. But then I saw another one where they had live lambs. And again, I don't agree with using the animals, live animals. The people were at the counter and they showed them the lambs. They walked them to the back and then you heard a gunshot. And then they brought out whatever. And the reactions of the people were wide-eyed and they were in shock, but there was nobody trying to leap over the counter and, you know, run back there. Although they didn't really get a chance to protest, because what happened in the first one is they showed the man saying, okay, here we go, I'm putting him in this machine now, your sausages will be ready in a minute. I mean, I couldn't hear the audio, but I'm pretty sure that's what he was saying. And they were saying, what, and they were trying to stop him, and they were right there, they were like a foot away from him, and he was right in front of them. Whereas some of them, on the second one, which was, I don't even know if it was the same comedy, you know, like if it was the same TV show or whatever the story was, they were behind a counter, they were far away from the sheep and the lambs, and they really wouldn't have had any idea that this was going to happen. They were just standing there waiting, and then they heard a gunshot. So I do think it was like a comedy TV show. I haven't seen that one shared that much. Like, the vegans haven't really been spreading that one around. But anyway, that's the first thing I wanted to talk about, and I feel better about it, and I articulated it, and, you know, and I do try to see the positive in things, but I just think we have to be really, really careful when we're going to. I don't agree with using victims. Now, I don't know if I doubt it was vegans doing it. Like I said, to me, it seemed like some sort of prank TV show where they did it, and it wasn't actually an animal rights video. It was just, like I say, used as an example. So I know that the people who, maybe some of the people who shared it, maybe they realized that using a live pig is not good, is wrong. But I didn't see any disclaimers to that effect. I actually didn't, but maybe I didn't look around enough. Anyway, I wanted to talk about that, so thanks for listening. The second thing I wanted to talk about was something that, these are all random topics, but I wrote a list actually, because otherwise I could ramble far too much, and they're not really related, but they're just things that I've been wanting to do a podcast about, so I'm going to do them all in one podcast. I hope this isn't too noisy. I'm not sitting in front of my computer. I'm trying to sit on a more comfortable seat while I do this, so I'm kind of hope it's not too noisy somehow and the microphone banging around. Sorry about that if it is. But one of the things I wanted to really talk about was something else that is something that's been really building up for a long, long time. And it's something that I've basically been exploring since the beginning of my podcast, actually. But it's kind of come to a bit of a culmination in my head, where I finally feel like I really want to explore this concept a bit more. The concept is that I see a lot of people, obviously we know the welfarists tell us that we're going to scare people away from going vegan because of the way that we deliver the truth. Well, my response to that is, and always has been, if you can deliver it better, can you please go out and do it? Because we need people doing it. In fact, we need all the vegans to do it. And if you can do it better than me, then bless you. But that's not really what they're saying. What they're saying is stop not supporting our welfarist campaigns. That's what they're saying. So it's not the way we say it. Even if we put little sparkling flowers on our delivery and soft piano music behind our delivery, it's because we refuse to compromise the victims. We can't do it. So it's not the way that we're doing it. It's what we're doing. We are telling the truth and we're not compromising. So that's old news. But I do see there's this insidious effect of that, and it also has its merit. So like for me, I've always thought to myself, and I've always done this my whole podcast, okay, I had this opportunity to talk to somebody and it didn't go well, or I didn't feel like it went well. What can I do differently? Did I create a negative memory for this person about these ideas? And what I'm starting to focus on is, hang on a minute, I actually believe that we're giving ourselves way too much importance. And let me explain. So these ideas, I'm talking about abolitionist advocacy now, that's all I'm talking about. And by abolitionist vegan advocacy, I mean the theory of the abolition of animal rights by Gary, the theory of animal rights, the abolitionist approach to animal rights by Gary Francione. That's what I'm talking about, okay? So I got introduced to this theory, I got introduced to this, the message, the ideas. They're actually ideas, is what they are. They're just words from this man's brain put down on a piece of paper and coming out of his mouth. That's what they are. They are ideas, right? Just like the ideas of, they're basic fundamental truths, right? That's what we recognize. And as Jeff said at the stall on Saturday, they're irrefutable. They are irrefutable. Now, here we have these powerful, powerful ideas. They are astonishingly brilliant and simple and powerful and profound. People are so shocked by their simplicity that they kick themselves that they did not see through the fog themselves. They had to read this man's work or whatever in order to hear it. So credit to Gary Francione for putting those together, resisting, getting out of all of the quagmire of the animal movement, which he was involved in the beginning with Peter and that, and extricating himself as soon as he saw that it was going this way, and thinking clearly and sticking with it for 25 years, writing these books against all, you know, opposition and all of these terrible things that people do to each other in terms of slander and hate and anger and hostility and ostracizing and all of these terrible things. And, you know, so credit to Gary Francione for his body of work, for giving us this amazing work that we can refer to that's irrefutable. There's all kinds of complications, and there are some nuances when it comes to, like, for example, horses. People say, well, if you have horses, you have to exercise them somehow, and it's not right to. So that's an example of. I'm not saying that the ideas. I don't know enough about horses and horse maintenance, but I'm just talking the fundamental ideas of that. If you think animals matter morally, you go vegan. If you are an animal advocate, you promote veganism and you go vegan. Those things, the abolitionist approach, no welfare reform, that's regulating torture, that's actually speciesist. All of those, that's what I'm talking about, the fundamental truth, the fundamental, just read the six principles of the abolitionist approach, right? So to me, these ideas, they were life-changing. Like, I'll never forget when I read them and I just was like, oh my God, you know, this is it. I am really so glad that I have read this, because this has sort of opened up a way of thinking about other animals that was completely shut down in my brain. And but I think that a lot of us who are the sort of messengers or who are spreading these ideas, including those who no longer, who deliberately omit mentioning Gary Francione at all, they just say the ideas, they're spreading them hopefully accurately, but refusing to even mention him. But even those of us who do mention and refer people directly to his work, which is what I insist on doing, I think that this worry about how we are scaring people away, and, you know, did that person like me, did I make a bad impression, or was I too harsh, or did I use too strong of an analogy in that moment and turn that person will now never go vegan because of me? I think that we're giving ourselves too much importance. I mean, obviously, if you really insult someone or scare them, or if you don't challenge them, I think challenging people is a good thing. They may not like you for it, but I think that's something that you just have to put up with. If you're a speaker of truth and going against the status quo, you are going to be disliked by people who you are challenging, because you're forcing them to think. You're not forcing them. That is the wrong thing to say. That's a word that's used wrongly now, so now I can't say it anymore. Like, you used to mean that you were creating an environment for this person to think critically, but no, now it means that you're sort of conducting a mind experiment on them against their will and all this ridiculous stuff. People are like, you're forcing people. It's like, I'm speaking words. I am not following people, tying their hands behind their backs and then, you know, controlling what they put in their mouth. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So we're not forcing, but we are fostering this thinking, this creative thinking. We're challenging people. That's what we're doing. And I think we have to trust that the idea, I mean, you have to learn them, the philosophy, you have to internalize it. And it's a moral internalization that you're doing. It's not mathematics. It's not scientific formulas. It is a simple right and wrong. Do non-human animals matter morally? Yes, they do. Well, there you go. That's your baseline right there. So when I'm talking to people at the stall or even online, I trust the ideas. They fight and they scream, but as long as you're engaging with that person and you keep sending them the ideas, those ideas are really amazing ideas, and there's nothing you can do to diminish them unless you misrepresent them or you compromise the moral message. You have to try to be clear so you can confuse people. You can be confused, and that's an easy thing to happen. That happens to me. But the more you advocate, the clearer you can be, and you basically can stick to the bottom line. And so I think we, the messengers of these ideas, are overinflating ourselves, you know, giving ourselves way too much importance in terms of, I don't think that I am, I think I was giving myself too much credit that I'm going to share these incredible ideas, and the ideas themselves, they stand alone, no matter, you know, as long as you are being uncompromising and you've got them clear and things, those ideas, they're unstoppable. I've already said that in the abolitionist movement. It is, I knew it. There's no way. You just can't shut these ideas down. They're everywhere. I see them everywhere now. And I just think it's giving ourselves a little too much credit or importance to say that we can meet someone who's never really even thought about animal issues before, which a lot of people haven't, at least not seriously. We can start to share these incredible ideas with them, which are in themselves really fundamental and profound, and then that, but because we used some kind of strong, because we might have used the wrong word or said something that offended them personally because they're a Muslim, and we used an example that offends Muslims in some way, or they're a Jew and we used it, or they're African American, or they're a woman or something, and we just made a little mistake in our human interaction with this person, or we used an analogy that was seemingly doesn't seem very strong to us but might be strong to them, and they might be shocked by the analogy, like this, the analogy with slavery, the analogy with fundamental human rights abuses. You have to use those carefully, but you can do it. And then people are saying, well, that person might never go vegan because of me. And I'm thinking, come on, really? I mean, give them a little more credit and give yourself a little less credit. I don't think I really have the power to override the ideas so much with my personality. I think you plant these seeds, and I'm not completely undermining the importance of human psychology and relations and memory and associations. So they might associate you, this really unpleasant person that they hate, with this ideas, and it might make them resist them, whatever. But I really think that we have to be, first of all, obviously I'm advocating being, you know, non-violent and not calling people names and not getting sucked into personal name calling on both sides, and, you know, because people will actually do that as a defense mechanism to you, and it's really tempting to defend yourself against whatever name they're calling you, like arrogant or condescending or fundamentalist or holier than thou or you know, all of those things. But I really think we need to trust the ideas more. Just get them out there, and don't spend so much time trying to mold yourself into this perfect mask so that you don't ruffle these people's feathers, and you, that's not speciesist, ruffling feathers, just blowing in the wind. That's just, I don't think that's speciesist any more than hightailing it or pricking up your ears. I don't think those are, because they're not related to animal exploitation. They're talking about non-human animal traits, but they're not directly related to exploitation. So I think you can say ruffle feathers, don't ruffle feathers. So yeah, you can, I just think we need to not be so scared to use really powerful ideas. They are strong, but I think they're very powerful. And I think we have to, I think if we really look at human nature, we see people telling someone to their face, well, you know, you've just completely put me off and I'll never consider it again. But we don't, I just think that these ideas, I really do think that that person goes away with them. And I think that your sort of personal importance, I mean, this is generally a complete stranger, and it might even just be somebody on the internet, right? I mean, really, are they that? I mean, sure, there are people who get obsessed, and there are trolls who troll specific, like, celebrities and things, but let's keep it real here. I just think it's a little too much to overestimate your you know, the when it comes to these ideas that we are sharing, which are unbelievably powerful and simple, that your personality in that moment with this complete stranger is going to be the only thing they remember, and that it's going to override the ideas, like your personality is more important or more powerful than those ideas. I think in some cases it can be in terms of some things, but I don't think in cases like this. I really don't. If you really learn how to express these things clearly and concisely and really keep the conversation on track, I just think that it's you don't have to be as worried. And I don't want people to misinterpret this and have, you know, I'm not saying that it is unimportant, the relationship, or that it is unimportant, your personality. I mean, something that sometimes there's nothing you can do. I have a personality that some people like and some people hate, and that's just everybody. And that's just life, and we can't let that, we just have to accept that. But the ideas themselves, they don't have a personality. Ideas don't have a personality. Ideas don't have a smell. They don't have a face. They don't have a style. They are just these tangible, or, you know, like these, I mean, I can't describe it. So I think trust in the ideas, and don't be so hung up on yourself so much. That's not to say, again, for the last time, that you can just behave inappropriately with people, or that you shouldn't try to learn from personal interactions with people, where maybe you could say, okay, next time maybe I didn't have to use that particular analogy. There must be another analogy I can use. For example, one of the analogies I've started using now, instead of rape or child molestation, I talk about dolphins and fur seals, because I've tapped into, there are a lot of non-vegans and vegans who fetishize animals and have certain very distinct hierarchies. So I will talk to someone and they'll say, this is ridiculous, or whatever the resistance that they're having to the ideas, because they don't want to have to face up to their participation and exploitation. And I would say, well, listeners, if I was telling you, you know, that they need to stop the dolphin hunt now, would you say I was being radical or fundamental? You know, the same things we do with rape and slavery. So you can be creative, but the message is still there, that don't be afraid to cut to the chase. So I see a lot of worry, and I think a lot of it's insidious, and I do it too, but I've stopped worrying so much. I just concentrate on being really clear, and I really try to be really clear. I try not to get sucked into personality things. I try not to, that's another thing, like if somebody says to me, well, I don't like you, I think that you're really annoying, I kind of just ignore it, or just say, well, you don't have to talk to me, I mean, if you don't want to, like, I'll just say, like, look, I'm just a stranger on the internet, I'm sharing these ideas with you, you're talking, you know what I mean, like, I don't get sucked into that, I don't want them to say, I don't like to say, well, I've got friends, and they say that I'm not annoying, and, you know, you just don't even go there, you know, it's just a distraction from the ideas. God, how many times have I said the word ideas in the last 20 minutes? Probably 50 million times. I repeat myself far too much. And I do it in real life too, not just on my podcast. It's one of those annoying things about myself that I want to change. There we are, speaking about annoying personality traits. That's one that I want to work on. But, it doesn't mean that I think that I'm going to make someone never, ever, ever go vegan because I repeated myself too much to them. I think that the theory and the ideas is trumps my little quirks, but that's just me, I guess. So that was another thing I wanted to talk about. I hope that makes people feel better, and I hope you got the right message from it and not the wrong message from it, but I do my best. I feel better now. I've been trying to articulate that for a while. Well, I've been thinking about it for a while, and I haven't tried to articulate it, and I just did now, so let's hope it worked. The other thing I wanted to go into was that, because there's still this huge welfare movement, and I do sometimes, like, I see the abolitionist ideas everywhere, especially compared to what it was like 5 years ago. The difference is huge, and I've talked about that. It's really, really great, but still, I'll go on a New Zealand, you know, welfarist page or supposed vegan page, and I'm just like, oh, we've got such a long way to go, and there's so many, you know, speciesist sort of ideas in the mainstream animal rights movement, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, how long is it going to take before that is the minority of thought, you know? And I think, well, they've got all this money and they've got all this marketing and they've got all this, they're very slick, they are very experienced at promoting themselves, I do this full time for pay, you know, that's part of the reasons why they're so successful. But I also do think that one of the reasons why there's so many new welfarist vegans is because when you first go vegan in the very beginning, you're still really speciesist, because speciesism is like racism and sexism and heterosexism and all of these discriminations that we get indoctrinated with either consciously by some people or unconsciously by others, just inherently in our society from basically the moment that we start to be able to even understand the world around us. We're being indoctrinated with speciesism, sexism, racism. So just as it is when you wake up to racism and you're part in it, like say you're a white person and you just learn about white privilege, which is, you know, embarrassingly enough something I've only been learning about over the last year or so, where I've been reading a lot of things and I've had people who have talked to me about it and woke me up to the fact that even though I wasn't a rich person, I still had huge amounts of white privilege, and I have white privilege, I have this thing, I don't like that and I want to change it, but the first step to changing it is recognizing it, acknowledging it, owning it, right? But now I'm realizing I still have all of these preconceptions. I still have racism in me, and I want it out. I want it out, but you first have to be able to recognize it and acknowledge it. And it's the same with speciesism, right? Because we are so speciesist. I mean, we cannot do the things that we do all our lives to other animals from the age of however young we are. When we're indoctrinated by our parents through our whole adult lives, a lot of us, without being so unbelievably speciesist that it's just not even funny. So when you wake up and go vegan and say, right, I'm going vegan, this is really bad, you're still really speciesist though, because indoctrination like that doesn't go away overnight. Unlike what the welfarists say about us, the new welfarists say about us, we understand that these things are deeply ingrained, and that it's taken 34 years of my life being ingrained with speciesism, and I'd like to think it's not going to take 34 years before I can really turn around and say, you know what, I've conquered it as much as is humanly possible in myself. You know, I think it would be a lot, I'm hoping it's a lot quicker than that, but new vegans, they're still really speciesist, because you don't get rid of these things instantly, even when you want to, even when you wake up and say, I don't want to be speciesist anymore, speciesism is wrong. Although the welfarist movement doesn't talk about speciesism enough, although they're starting to now, like I said, they're being forced, there's that word again, to confront and incorporate some of this rhetoric, because the new vegans are getting introduced to the abolitionist approach. And that's the thing we want, you see. We want the new vegans introduced to the abolitionist approach. So one of the reasons why the welfarist movement gets so many new vegans is because new vegans are very speciesist still. So they will jump all over an anti-dolphin, you know, anti-dolphin hunt campaign, or a don't eat dogs campaign, and these are all vegans doing it, new vegans, or they'll jump all over the fur campaigns and things like that, because they're still speciesist. You know how many new vegans just excuse and excuse and excuse and excuse using your old leather goods, their old cow goods, without any necessity? I mean without any necessity, not like, you know, you have children, you can't afford to buy them all new pairs of shoes, you're doing your best, you know, I'm talking like, well, it's just, I don't want to just throw them away, so I'm just going to wear them out, right? And They're very speciesist towards cows to do that. If that was fur, I bet you that would be in the garbage right now. I am telling you. So new vegans are very speciesist, so they get sucked into the species welfare movement because it doesn't, it's they're still species and they don't know it, and they think it's all fine and dandy to have hierarchies and to point out different abuses in cows, and they are just at the bottom of the heap. And chickens, well, they hardly even matter at all, really. You can just eat free range eggs, and you know what I mean. So I think that's just something to be aware of, and to sort of help give some insight into what's going on with these new vegans. And I like myself, like I people are like, you're too this, and you're going to put people off being vegan, and you're not being comp you know you're being too uncompromising with people. What if they're new vegans? And my own experience, and I can only go by that, is that look, when I was a new vegan, it was because of those people who were just constantly reminding me, like, they weren't even doing it to me directly. They were just putting the ideas out there. They were saying pearls are not vegan, and if you if you keep using this product, and you don't need to use it, and it's an animal product, that's not vegan. And and I would think, oh damn it, leave me alone, God, stop it. But they were the ones who made me confront my speciesism and made me go vegan. They didn't pander to it. They didn't allow me to keep doing it and pat me on the back and say, oh well, you're doing the best you can, when I wasn't doing the best I can. Was I'm not talking about necessity. I'm talking about unnecessity. So thanks to those people, I was strong in my veganism. I became a vegan. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't even really be vegan, because I'd still be using animal products or reusing things, or saying, oh well, it's old, but I won't buy anymore. You know what I mean? So it's I owe those people. I'm grateful to those people for constantly not compromising and saying to people, I don't, look, if you're vegan, you don't do that, and that's that. And as a new vegan, I was like, oh what, that too? Or oh, you that too? Or oh really, that too? But then when I sort of learned about speciesism, it made sense to me, and I was like, yes, I don't want to actually be speciesist anymore. And then I started looking at the speciesism in myself, and it's still there. It just is, and I really want to get rid of it, and I just really keep trying to work on it. So I just think that's insight. So that's why we really want new vegans to be introduced to the abolitionist approach, because that challenges speciesism really instantly. It talks a lot about speciesism and violence and discrimination, and there's the six principles of the abolitionist approach, so we which are really profound in themselves. So that's why it's really important for us to reach new vegans, and non-vegans, obviously. I mean, reaching non-vegans with the abolitionist approach is supremely important, because you're challenging speciesism to them. So when they do go vegan, based on their exploration of those ideas, they are way more informed about their own speciesism and about it in general, and about how the hierarchies are speciesist and any animal use is species, that they will probably have a clearer and less confusing time when they go vegan, because they'll say, hey, I already know that I don't need to wear use these shoes anymore. They are made of the skin of slaughtered slaves. I'm not going to put that on my body, and I'm not going to walk around the streets, or I'm not going to show people that that's okay, because it's not. I'm going to get rid of them. And so I sort of, I think that that's, those people are quite lucky. I was introduced to the abolitionist approach really quickly, so I was like that. But in the very, very beginning, I'm talking about the first few months, I was like things like I said, pearls. And in fact, it was William who helped me. I held on to my pearls because I wanted to sell them, because I was really struggling, and I was really struggling for money. And I said, I've got this necklace, and it had been valued at US$800 at one point, and that's like over NZ$1,000. And I said to William, I'm going to sell it. And his reaction was brilliant. And this, he was so brilliant. He was like, and I was surprised, because I was still speechless, right? And he got it quicker than me, right? This is Will Paul. So I'm like, I've got this necklace, but I'm going to sell it because I really need the money. And he says, you can't do that. What are you talking about? You can't sell that necklace. You're gonna use, you're using animals. You're making money off an animal product. He looked at me like, he looked at me like I'd let him down as well. Like, what? I thought you got it, you know? And he shocked me. And I said, oh my God, you're so right. Whereas other people would say, oh, well, you're just so much a fundamentalist, William. Now Elizabeth's going to run off and she's not going to be vegan because of you. She's just going to start eating animals again because you just refuse to compromise. Not. I was like, wow, he's right. I was embarrassed. I felt ashamed of myself. I thought, I can't believe that I didn't realize that myself. But thank you, William, for telling me that. And, of course, I destroyed the necklace. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think we just, it's the reason that welfareism is attracted to so many new vegans, especially if they've gone vegan through talking to other welfarist vegans finally they get some alone time and they're like, well, I know you signed on to our cage-free egg campaign, but I'm vegan. Oh, so you don't eat these cage-free eggs? Why are you promoting them? No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, so I think that's something to keep in mind. New vegans are very speciesist still. Okay? Of course they are. You don't get rid of that overnight. Now, how long have I been talking for? 46 minutes. Okay. This was something... This last thing I'm going to talk about was something that I thought was really telling, and I just want to vent about it. So here's my rant, my real rant. As I said, I'm very frustrated about the movement in New Zealand, but then again, I'm frustrated about the movement all over the world, but then again, I'm seeing the abolitionist ideas permeating, breaking through, sometimes in confused ways, sometimes in misrepresented or misused ways, but it's certainly there seems to be more acknowledgement or more people having these ideas in their true form reach them, because I'm sort of seeing evidence of that. So what happened is, I usually, like I said, because it's too depressing, I usually don't go on the pages of the movements in New Zealand. I don't go on the Facebook pages of a lot of the groups and things like that, because then I can kind of get depressed. But I got tagged on Facebook, which doesn't happen very often, on a SPCA New Zealand announcement. So the SPCA New Zealand has a page, I didn't know that, where they were congratulating a farmer who was adopting, I think it was their blue ribbon animal welfare standards or something. I didn't really read the details of the Happy Meat promotion that was going on. But what I found really interesting was that supposedly this blue ribbon meant it was not factory farming as per this sort of definition. You know, it was about pigs. These were pigs, I think. They were going to have, there was all these little ticks, you know, those awful animal welfare ratings that they're supposed to be, they can move around and they can spread their wings. And you're like, don't even get me started. It's like, that's your victory. But anyway, so he ticked all these things. Now, definitely, this was what would be considered, if it was true what this farmer was doing, this is definitely what would be considered free range and not factory farming. Okay? We've already said we don't know who's going to regulate this. It's just, is it really happening? But let's say it was happening and the SPCA said, yes, you're doing, your happy exploitation is on par with our standards. Here's your little, we're going to give you a big praise. So on the page, there was, of course, all the people saying, oh, this is so great. What a lovely farmer. And yay, you know. But then there were some people saying, really giving it to the SPCA the way that the abolitionists give it to basically all the non-abolitionist vegans, saying, you know, how can you live with yourselves and how can you award this farmer for exploiting these animals? You know, they're all going to be slaughtered, and you know, all of the things which I totally agree with. I'm like, yep, that's true. You know, I mean, this is true. They're like, you know, if there's no, you know, these, just because these pigs get to turn around for a few days before they go to the slaughterhouse, it doesn't make it any better. This is still wrong, and la 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 la. So I was like, okay, but I'm thinking to myself, well, this is the SPCA, though. I mean, the SPCA doesn't even call itself an animal rights organization. It never has called itself an animal rights organization. It's not run by vegans. It's, as far as I know, there's no vegans involved. It's an animal welfare organization, always has been. And this is exactly on par with their agenda. I mean, this is their agenda. In terms of the animals we consume, and then they have another agenda for pet animals, and they have other kinds of agendas. But I was like, I just saw all this sort of vitriol, and I was like, well, okay. But I said, you know, I made a comment that, like, oh, and so what happened is I was looking at some of the people who were commenting, and I was randomly, because this is New Zealand, so this is local, so I should really try to see what the, maybe things have changed in New Zealand. I'm really out of touch, you know, and that would be, not be hard to do, because I really don't get out much except for just to do my stall. So I clicked on a few random people, and I saw them, the same people who were sort of criticizing this SPCA for giving this farmer an award, were posting this big happy victory celebration announcement from SAFE that the Labour government, the Labour Party of New Zealand, has pledged to ban factory farming in New Zealand, and give them a big thumbs up and vote for Labour, and this is fantastic, and oh, happy, happy, happy. And so I'm like, well, hang on a minute. Why are you criticizing this SPCA announcement on one hand, and then praising SAFE? This guy is doing exactly what you supposedly want, because you want to supposedly ban factory farming. Well, what do you think that means? This guy is banned factory farming. He's doing completely non-factory farming farming. He's doing the whole nine of what you all claim you want to see happen. So yet when SAFE makes an announcement, and it's exactly the same thing. SAFE saying, this person, this, you know, political party has pledged to ban factory farming. Yay, they're fantastic. Let's all be happy. Is exactly the same thing as the SPCA saying, this farmer has given these pigs all of these things and ticked off all these boxes, and he's doing this free range stuff. Yay, this is great. They are identical. But they're not identical. Here's the difference, and this is the difference that really bothers me. The SPCA isn't claiming to be an animal rights group, and never has. The SPCA is not run and you know, populated and membered by vegans. SAFE is supposedly calling itself an animal rights group. Now, I think they've changed themselves a bit, and they've called, in some places they say New Zealand's leading animal protectionist or something, but when you go on Google and you look up SAFE, it says the animal rights group. They still present that as themselves, and they've always said they were animal rights, and they are run by vegans. So how can you, on the one hand, be all over the SPCA's announcement saying all of these things? Those are the things you should be saying to SAFE. Okay, does that make sense to everybody listening? Because it makes sense to me. So I'm just like, what is this confusion here? What is going on? So I just left a comment basically saying, you know, yeah, this is pretty obscene, but I'm more worried about what SAFE and these other groups are doing, because they claim to be animal rights and they're run by vegans, and vegans support them. So what's the, you know, this is exactly the same thing, except that they do it in the name of animal rights. So I just thought that was really, really interesting. I thought it was extremely interesting, and I thought it was really disturbing, and I really couldn't figure it out. Because I'm like, this is what you want. You want to ban factory farming? Here you go. This is what you're going to get. And then they claim they don't want to ban factory farming. They actually want people to go vegan. Well, that's not the message you're giving out. because all you're saying is ban factory farming, which is exactly what this SPCA farmer is part of. So it just was so confusing and weird, and I'm like, where are these people's, like, where's their heads? Like, what's going on there? So I got into a conversation with a woman. I left one comment, like I said, because I was tagged. So like somebody had very kindly promoted my page on this SPCA comment. I don't believe we're sharing the safe story. That wasn't what they were doing, but they've promoted Gary Francione as well. So thank you, that person, for tagging me, and promoting my page, and telling people to go check out my page. And they made a really good comment, and they made a really well-informed comment about why this is wrong, just in general. Like, look, that you're making people feel better. These pigs are still going to be slaughtered, la, la, la. And then the only reply that she got was like somebody who completely didn't respond substantively at all, didn't respond to any of the well thought out, you know, very valid points she raised. All they said was, oh, it's just like talking to a brick wall. Well, that's not a response. I mean, that just is zero. Like, that's pointless. Like, why even bother to write that? If you don't have anything to say to respond to the comment, please don't just write an insulting one-liner. That's just like poisoning the well. You see what I mean? This is the kind of thing we need to just let, like, water off a duck's back. Just whew. Because it's just, yeah. But anyway, so because I was tagged and because I saw this thing and then I saw this other thing happening, I was like, well, I'm going to come on here and I am going to draw attention to what Safe is doing and tell these people, you know, why aren't you over there criticizing them for doing the exact same thing as what the SPCA is doing here, except that Safe's doing in the name of animal rights. Which is even worse. And so I left a comment to that, and I'd responded to this other woman who put up a total straw man. She was not a vegan, and she was saying, because there were people on there who were making all of these criticisms, which, like I say, they were valid criticisms that they were making against the SPCA, the same kind of criticisms that the abolitionist movement's been making. So I'm like, oh, well, here's this is what I'm talking about, where I see evidence of abolition, but it's misplaced, it's in the wrong, it's wrong-headed, because they won't do it to Safe, but they're doing it. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm like, come on, you know, find your bearings, you know, you're a bit lost. So, I did get into a conversation with a woman, and, she challenged my comment and she called me condescending. And I just said, I'm not even going to really worry about that. That's not really interested in that. And we kept talking and we had a good conversation. I said, you know, you really need to just go vegan. I mean, if you care about animals, you just go vegan. So I did get into a little discussion on there, and then I left, because like I said, I don't really hang around too much on other pages. I just go on my page only, and I share Gary Francione's theory, and I moderate on the Abolitionist Approach web's Facebook page, and that's all that I do. And I'm quite happy doing that. Thank you very much. But this was interesting. So that really stood out to me as another example. But like I said, I am acknowledging the good stuff. The good stuff is that they were recognizing how wrong this was to praise this farmer and make people feel better and ignore the fact that they're being exploited, and that it's, you know, focusing on the treatment, and that's always good. But there's always like this little, you know, that's the silver lining, and that's the thing where I'm saying, but we just need to sort of get on point. And but I think some people would rather jump in traffic than criticize Safe. It just seems to be something that people are just not capable of doing. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Don't you think that's interesting? I thought it was really interesting. I think I'm done. That was pretty much all of the things that have been bouncing around in my brain over the last month, and some of them for years. And I'll probably revisit some of them and blah, 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 on and on it goes. But just so you know, finish on a good note. We had a really great stall on Saturday past. It was three of us there, me, Bubs, and Jeff. We engaged a lot of people, even though it was a quiet day, so it wasn't as busy as we'd like it to have been. We still had a really good day, and it's fun with three, because when it's quiet, you can talk to each other, and we were just chatting away, and But we did. We had some really good conversations, and we made lots of really great connections. We shared these incredible ideas with new people who'd never heard them before, and that is a beautiful thing to do. A beautiful thing to do, I'm telling you. Trust in those ideas. They are pretty amazing. Alright, so thank you so much for listening. I'm just going to make my way back over to my computer. Again, I apologize for any noise caused by the headphones, and I will try to come back with another podcast which hopefully will be useful. And other than that, have a lovely evening or morning or afternoon or whatever the time is. Okay, I'll be back. Bye.